up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello there, and welcome to this episode of New Horizons. Thanks for your company. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Ricky Chaplin is Advocacy Officer with Blind Citizens Australia. We've spoken to him several times on the program. We'll be talking to him in just a moment. Before we do, episode number 565, that was the episode where I spoke with Emma Bennison about IRA, had some technical difficulties, and in fact, people who downloaded that episode got the wrong episode. I have fixed that now, so if you want to hear episode number 565, remember that's the one on IRA, it is now available for you to download from your podcatcher, or you can have a look at our Podbean website. blindcitizens.podbean.com. Ricky, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Vaughan. Great to be here.
There are standards for accessible transport. They're being reviewed at the moment.
Yes, they are. This is the third review of the National Transport Standards for People with Disabilities. And we are putting in a submission along with the Australian Blindness Forum and AFDO, which is the Australian Federation of Disability Organisations. So we will be running some consultations. I'm not quite sure of the details at this point in terms of when the teleconferences will be, but we will certainly be consulting with members about their experiences of using various types of public transport.
Are there specific things that are being reviewed on this occasion?
It's fairly all-encompassing from what I understand. So everything from taxis through to planes, through to trains and trams, buses, the whole gamut. So it's a really good opportunity, I think, for people to voice their concerns.
Now, speaking of taxis, there have been some concerns about the interstate taxi vouchers. Now, we know that there's some questions around the NDIS and people's access to the taxi transport subsidy schemes in various states in Australia. How is that going, and how does the interstate taxi scheme impacted by that?
Okay, a couple of issues you've raised there. So let's start with the interstate taxi vouchers. That was an issue that I raised on the email, was as a result of feedback from a member who was very concerned about people's experiences after her own experience of trying to use a interstate taxi voucher. So in her case, she was abused by the driver and he didn't accept the voucher. I then sought feedback about people's experiences of using interstate taxi vouchers to see how widespread this was, because anecdotally I'd heard different stories over the years of people not having success with using these vouchers. I got a variety of feedback from people saying they hadn't had any issue at all, to others saying, well, yeah, the driver had to check with the radio operator and see whether these interstate vouchers were actually legitimate or not. Some people were fine and they were able to use the vouchers, some weren't. So it certainly seems that there is a level of inconsistency regarding training when it comes to interstate taxi vouchers for taxi drivers in various states. So actually one tip that I received, which I think is really useful, is that when you get into a taxi, regardless of what state you're in, you advise the driver that you want to use an interstate taxi voucher if you're not in your own state. And then you've kind of got the journey to figure out what you're going to do. And the driver can then contact the radio base and they can get confirmation that the interstate taxi voucher is indeed legitimate. So I think that's a really good approach. And of course, we should remember that the numbers of the taxis are available in large print and in braille on the doors of all taxis. So if you have any trouble with the driver, you can verify the number of the taxi by using a couple of those different methods.
Mm. Those interstate taxi vouchers are valid anywhere, aren't they?
That's correct. I was advised that in Adelaide, the voucher that or the taxi subsidy they receive included the interstate voucher. I wasn't aware of that. So, yeah, I'd certainly be interested to hear from other people from South Australia regarding that particular issue. But yeah, that was a new one to me, I have to say.
And of course, the rule with the interstate vouchers is that the amount and the way that it is to be used is the same as it would be in your home state. So in the states where it's a 50% subsidy up to the value of, say, $25, that's what you get for the interstate voucher. In the states where the value is different, that's also what you get.
Yep, that's correct. So there's no sense of uniformity in terms of a national taxi subsidy scheme, and certainly we've been pressing for that for a long, long time, and we will continue to do so. The other issue you raised was the longevity of the state-based taxi subsidy schemes. Now, that is probably going to vary between states. There is no level of consistency regarding the approach to that in relation to the NDIS. So in Queensland, I know, for example, that the taxi subsidy scheme in Queensland is guaranteed until June 2019. At this point, after that, we don't know what's going to happen. There isn't really any guarantee in other states regarding how long the state-based taxi subsidy schemes are going to last. So, yeah, I think people should be aware of that. And if you've got a branch in your state that is has the capacity to advocate on that issue, I would certainly advise you to do so, because at this point, yeah, the future is quite uncertain.
My understanding of the taxi subsidy schemes is it was a way for the state government to give taxi riders with disabilities a bit of a helping hand, given the fact that it was cheaper to do that than to make sure that their public transport infrastructure was completely accessible. It seems to me that's largely been lost sight of. It seems to be now about disability funding and specifically the NDIS. Is there any move towards ensuring the greater accessibility of public transport, so when they look at closing down these schemes?
There doesn't appear to be, no, and particularly in regional areas, this is very problematic. And even between states, you know, there are different approaches to consultation around the development of new public transport initiatives. So we know in Victoria, for example, that the development of the new high-capacity train system down there, Downer, who's the company that's been looking after that project, have been very proactive in terms of consulting before the trains are actually built. And we've got some fantastic wins down there. There's been a fantastic result in Victoria, whereas in Queensland, we're retrofitting the new NGR trains. And, you know, that's a very unfortunate result, and we're still working through the consequences of that decision not to consult in advance the building of those trains. And then that doesn't even focus on regional areas at all, where, you know, you don't even have trains most of the time. You've got a lot of buses that aren't accessible, so there aren't too many low-floor buses in regional areas. You don't have the infrastructure that provides, you know, the announcements to people who are waiting at those bus stops in regional areas. Even in capital cities, the buses are a long way behind. In Brisbane, for example, we don't have on-board announcements. We don't have announcements on the platforms or terminals themselves in the centre of the city regarding which buses are arriving. So there's a long way to go in terms of the accessibility of public transport, and this is why this review at this time is very important for us to contribute to, even though we're in a sense banging our heads against the brick wall. We've raised all of these issues before, but we must continue to do so, because if we don't, there'll never be any hope of them being addressed.
Let's move on now, Ricky, to the National Disability Insurance Scheme. It's rolling out in more and more areas and to more and more people. Where are we with that?
Yeah, I think the main issue that people are having with the NDIS in terms of the blindness and vision impairment community is that the adaptive technology requests that people are submitting are being rejected fairly commonly. There's a couple of issues that are contributing to that, as far as I can ascertain, given my experiences with advocacy cases. The first of those being that the reports being submitted to the NDIA, National Disability Insurance Agency, in the first place, aren't detailed enough. So we might get a report from an OT, occupational therapist, for example, saying that this is what the person needs, but they might not necessarily say, well, this is why it's the best option. We've tried other options that are cheaper, and this is why they don't work. So those reports are critical, in terms of their level of detail, to getting a good result. If they don't give that level of detail about what other cheaper options have been available and whether they've been trialed or not, it's not likely that you're going to get a positive outcome on your request for adaptive technology. So we've been pushing really hard at a systemic level with service providers to get them to provide that level of detail, but also it has meant that we are assisting a lot of people to appeal the decisions that have been made about their adaptive technology requests. The other issue that has arisen is that, particularly in regards to assistive technology, there isn't at the moment a set of standards that the NDIA have that make an assessor for assistive technology eligible to be able to make that assessment, for want of a better word. So I have been involved with the Australian Blindness Forum in a working group that is aimed at developing a set of criteria that would qualify people who are working in the assistive technology field to be able to make those assessments for the NDIA, so that the NDIA know that the level of assessment that they are receiving is legitimate, and that the people that are doing those assessments know what they're talking about. So it's quite a complex area that we're dealing with at the moment. And again, unfortunately, we've got a long road ahead before we get these issues resolved.
I guess there's a couple of questions that come out of that. Firstly, the first one that strikes me is, how much does the level of knowledge of the NDIS recipient buy into this first issue as to whether the reporting is at the required or appropriate level for the NDIA to make a sufficient decision?
I think it has a great deal of influence at the moment. So, for example, if you've got somebody who's nearly vision impaired through an accident or an illness, they're not necessarily going to know what adaptive technology they need or what's even available out there to make their lives better. Whereas if you've got someone who's born blind, like ourselves, for example, we know what those options are, and we can, to some degree, influence what the OT or the adaptive technology assessor says, because we can provide arguments for the investment in those technologies. But for somebody who doesn't have that knowledge, I think they're greatly disadvantaged.
So I guess really there's an area there which is largely untapped, and that is about assistive technology training for people who are going through rehabilitation or people who simply don't know a lot about technology. And I suppose frequently they would be people who have gone blind recently, but also people in regional remote areas for whom the education about the technology hasn't been as significant as it has been, as you say, for us.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And of course, one of the issues that people who are aging face is that, under the My Aged Care system, we still have not only the inequity regarding the provision of these technologies, but also the service in terms of being able to train these people on how to use the technologies available. Mm. And certainly in regional areas, people who are eligible for the NDIS, who have lost their vision due to health-related conditions or perhaps an accident and they're still eligible for the NDIS, they're less likely to be able to receive the adequate training that would be available in the capital city. So you're absolutely right about that.
Ricky Chaplin there with Blind Citizens Australia. We will continue that discussion in next week's program. If you'd like to contact BCA, bca@bca.org.au is the email address, and the phone number is 1-800-033-660. 1-800-033-660. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Talk to you again next week.
We'll achieve the realization of our dreams. Of our dreams.